Hello, everyone. Welcome to Longevity Post Podcast number 2. I'm your host, Scott Chiveri. Your motivational quote of the day is, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. Henry Ford. I'm joined today by the brilliant, immortal hair himself, Brian Simonis. Brian, how you doing?
Very well. How are you doing today?
I am fantastic. Thank you. Okay, so this is our second podcast, Brian. So our topic today is hair loss again. Now, as a follow-up to our first podcast, we discussed last time the origins of the famous immortal hair supplement regimen, particularly the core supplements in the regimen. And we also discussed the origins of the natural hair regrowth forum itself. And so for today, as a follow-up to that, I wanted to talk a little bit more about some of the ancillary supplements in the regimen. So I think the core supplements that we discussed last time were Eclonia Cava. We talked about trans-resveratrol, curcumin, alpha-lipoic acid, krill oil or omega-3 fatty acids. Is there anything that I'm missing?
Or those? Also vitamin D.
And vitamin D. And vitamin K2. We talked about Weston A. Price's Activator X or vitamin K2. Okay, so those are the kind of the core supplements to the regimen. Now, if people really want to throw the kitchen sink at their hair loss problem, there are other recommendations that you have. So I kind of wanted to get into those today. So so what's the first one you want to talk about?
Okay, well, the first one I think we'll get into is, they call it a vitamin E family known as tocotrienols. And that also comprises the tocopherols. So tocopherols are your basic vitamin E. You've got the alpha, beta, delta, and gamma tocopherols. And then you have another four isomers known as the tocotrienols. And these are 30 times more powerful, if you will, you know, than the typical vitamin E most people are familiar with. So you have an alpha, beta, delta, gamma tocotrienol. And all of those have their own unique attributes to them. You don't really want to isolate one fraction or isomer of vitamin E. You know, typically you'll see on a very cheap supplement, maybe something called DL tocopherol. The DL denotes that it's the delta fraction, and the L denotes that it's a synthetic form, and it may not be as effective. In fact, I can say it flat out, it is not as effective as the natural vitamin E. And further, if you have all eight isomers as they are in nature, you're going to have more of a natural response, which is going to be far more efficacious than a single isolated synthetic supplement. So on point about the tocotrienol and the tocopherols, everything all comprised together, you're going to have an interesting synergistic effect on overall the hair follicle. And what the tocotrienols and tocopherols do is they actually promote beneficial prostaglandins to the root of the hair follicle. And it does some other interesting effects as well. But before I get further into that a little bit, I should mention there is an interesting synergistic effect with some other botanicals. For example, if you look at Eclonia Cava or perhaps curcumin resveratrol, if you combine the tocotrienols together with any of these supplements, you're going to find that it's going to have a more pronounced inhibition, reduction, blocking effect, if you will, of the pro-inflammatory prostaglandins. So these are the kinds of things that really can, you know, hit your hair hard, you know, very powerful inflammation.
Okay. So, you know, I've heard about vitamin E as an antioxidant and as beneficial for skin, but you're saying that all eight isomers of the vitamin E, the tocopherols, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, and the tocotrienols combined have a beneficial impact on the beneficial prostaglandins, which operate on the hair follicle in some way. Is it an anti-inflammation action? Is that what they're doing?
Yes. One of them is prostaglandin D2. Another one is the, you know, the COX-2 pathway. They go, you know, to a nice long chain of different inflammations that ultimately result in some pretty bad inflammation. So this is just gives you more pronounced beneficial effect. And what's really interesting about the tocotrienol tocopherol family is it really hits specifically to the hair follicle. And one other thing about this is, if you look at the journal Lancet in the year 2000, they found that people with androgenetic alopecia had a more pronounced elevation of an inflammation marker known as lipoprotein A. Lipoprotein A is an inflammation marker found to increase your mortality rate from cardiovascular disease. And what the tocotrienols do specifically on that point is they do have a marked reduction in lipoprotein A. And lipoprotein A, think of it as sort of like a sticky adhesive material that tends to aggregate plaque. And it definitely is something you really want to be concerned about, especially if you have a family history of stroke or heart disease, and you're starting to, you know, show signs of hair loss. It's something you really want to consider adding to your supplement routine.
Okay. All right, very good. Okay, so high lipoprotein A, more likely to be bald and more likely to have heart problems.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. And so any specific recommendations of what people should look for? So when they're evaluating vitamin E supplement, just make sure that it also contains tocotrienols. Do you know offhand, are there any foods high in the tocotrienols, or do you just recommend typically taking a supplement?
Yes and no. There are, you know, there are certain plants that do contain these things. One of them is called annatto. Another is called palm oil.
Palm oil, yeah.
Okay. Palm oil is probably the more well-known source of the tocotrienols. Problem is, I don't know anyone that really, let's say, adores the taste of palm oil. I suppose it's
I don't know that it's that easy to find either. When I go to the store, I don't see palm oil on the shelves.
Yes, exactly. And so, you know, a lot of people don't like the taste. So that's one issue. And so, you know, frankly, if it were me, I like the convenience of a supplement. But, you know, if you really want to go buy food, it's certainly possible.
Okay. All right, very good. All right, so tocotrienols is the next heavy hitter. So what's after that?
After that, I guess we can get into iodine. And this is a bit of a controversial mineral because there are people who are sensitive to this. And there is a form that I think is well tolerated. Let's say it's act like a food. There's a supplement known as a thyroid boost, and it contains an organic form of not just the iodine, but also cofactors like selenium and things to maybe reduce heavy metal burden, which also is important. So when you have iodine, I suppose, in a more of a complex or a food form, and at moderate doses, it's not going to create crazy effects that can happen in some people, so individuals. So this is something that's going to be more or less less prone to any negative side effects that some people are concerned about.
Okay, so the label on the product is labeled Thyroid Boost, but the actual active ingredient is a something called modafinil. Is that correct, or is it some sort of kelp?
Yes, it is. It is a type of kelp. In fact, there's a Latin name for it. Sort of a bit of a background on this is during the Chernobyl meltdown, which was around, I believe it was 1986, if my memory serves me correctly, you had, you know, this substance was used to protect children and many other people from radiation poisoning. And so it had an effect of just dealing with the radioactive isotopes, and it has a very profound effect of protecting all the glands, you know, not just the thyroid. A lot of people, when they associate iodine, they think of the thyroid. It's really all of the glands, and all the glands actually need some iodine. Anything that secretes a fluid actually uses more iodine. The ovaries in a woman, they need more iodine. You know, the muscle tissue, the fat, all the glands are very, very hungry for the iodine. So frankly, there's just not enough iodine in iodized salt to really satisfy. Some people do benefit from iodine because if you think about it, every 17 minutes as your blood circulates through your thyroid, it's essentially cleansing or neutralizing some, you know, some nasty things you really don't want floating around in your blood, for one thing. And it also reduces that thing called lipoprotein A, Again, a cardiovascular marker. And it does tend to neutralize some inflammation. Again, some things in your blood you don't really want floating around there. So it can simply activate certain enzymes in your body and maybe promote longer health.
Okay, so just to clarify, so a few things. So I know that a lot of people that supplement with iodine will simply use something called Lugol's, and but that's just pure iodine, and so they'll use this, it's and it's a liquid form, so they'll just use a certain amount of drops per day in water or something, and they'll take it that way. Now, do you recommend Lugol's, or do you? You recommend a more natural form, such as this sea kelp, that also contains, because it also contains selenium and some other cofactors.
Yeah, well, Lugol solution is one particular formula that was developed, a long time ago, and it's part potassium iodide and also some iodine, so both are needed. One is an oxidized form, one's a reduced form. Some tissues like the oxidized form, some tissues like the reduced form. The reduced form contains an additional electron, so it just depends on which part of your body really wants one over the other. They're both needed. The problem with the Lugols is it can be very effective for many people, but some people have what's called an organification defect. And if they have this, it can be very difficult to actually use the iodine. So that's one issue some people have. So it's actually been found and observed that lower levels of iodine in the correct form could actually be more powerful, more efficacious for some people. And again, we're really looking at safety. There are some rare side effects that can be associated with iodine use. Maybe not for the reasons that many people say, but suffice to say, it's better to err on the side of caution with a more accepted form of the body knows what to do with.
Okay, I gotcha. I gotcha. So the organic concentrated sea kelp extract you recommend. So I get that versus Lugol's, but what are some of the specific mechanisms of action that actually are beneficial for hair? You mentioned lipoprotein A. Is there anything else that that is beneficial? Like, why is this on the top 10 supplements for hair loss?
Okay, that's a great question. And I should mention, yes, as you said, there is a 40-to-1 extract, so this is not just your basic seaweed. And it does have some heavy metal binding attributes, if you will, that I think are really exciting in of itself. And we'll have to get into that a little bit later. But so what makes the organic form of iodine interesting, along with some of the other constituents like selenium and other cofactors that make it simply work better, is if you look at the different hormones in the thyroid itself, there are certain inflammation mediators or things that create inflammation. One thing is called transforming growth factor beta. And transforming growth factor beta, there are different variants of this, and some of it is necessary, and some of it can be problematic. It's a bit of a complex signaling molecule. So I don't want to just say that all transforming growth factor beta is bad. It's a bit of a thorny issue if you just oversimplify it. But suffice to say that if it's upregulated in the wrong way, it can actually act as a hair follicle assassin. So what the iodine does is it can modify the correct type of thyroid hormone to actually bring this inflammation lower. So for example, if you don't have enough iodine in your body, you simply cannot produce enough T3, which is a more active thyroid hormone than your T4. T3 is 60% more active than the T4. So it's something that you really want to have running optimally. There's a lot of people who have some subtle signs of an iodine deficiency and simply do not know it. The problem is doctors do not know how to check for this because they're only trying to look at some superficial numbers on their thyroid lab tests. So what they think is normal may not be normal.
Okay. It's funny. One of the things that I'm learning in our discussions is that for some reason, the hair follicle has made a lot of enemies. You've got transforming growth factor. Beta is a hair follicle assassin in the wrong circumstances. We talked about MMP9 on the last podcast. We've talked about lipoprotein A. So apparently there are a lot of the hair follicles have pissed off a lot of things in the body for some reason, and have a lot of so hence the supplement regimen. Okay, so I get iodine, and I understand why you recommend an organic form. Okay, so what's next? What's next on your list of good supplements to add to the regimen?
Okay, well, I think for this third segment here, I think we're going to get into, as far as a supplement is concerned, maybe kind of, I'm just going to be a bit general on this and not talk about one specific supplement. We're going to really discuss, I think, the importance of heavy metal detoxification. And I'm not going to be specific on this because one type of heavy metal detoxification might work better for one person versus another person. So rather than to say, this, whatever it might be, is the thing to take, I'm going to be a little bit more general about this and just say that you might want to experiment and find out what's the correct one for you. But I should add, though, that Thyroid Boost, which is a supplement that does contain something called sodium alginate, sometimes could be enough for some people. Now, one of
Really?
my, it can
Really?
be, yeah, for enough. The thing about heavy metals is if you look at penguins in the South Pole, they have elevated levels of mercury and lead. If you look at people all over the place, the closer they look, they live to, the more industrialized their city is, or wherever they happen to be living, the greater incidence of hair loss. So there's definitely a connection between industrial pollution and hair loss. So when people step on their brakes in their car, they're releasing cadmium. You're breathing the cadmium, and that can essentially cause some problems. If you're looking at lead and mercury, they create their own disturbances in the body. We'll have to get into that a little bit deeper. But so one of my favorite supplements, we're going to call this maybe supplement number three of what we're discussing here, is something I like to refer to as, they actually refer to it as humic acid. So humic acid is an interesting supplement, and I take a form of something called hemofulvate. Hemofulvate is actually a combination of humic acid and fulvic acid. And so let me explain a little bit what humic acid is. It's a lot of the stuff is found in peat bogs, such as Hungary. And in Hungary, when they would have animals that would sort of eat or feed, where there's dense peat bogs of this humic acid. Humic acid is essentially a breakdown of thousands of years of vegetation and what happens. And it tends to have this interesting material that has a number of, you can sort of casts a giant net of things that are going to sort of attract any positively charged particle. So these positively charged particles could be pathogens or any type of negative substance in the body, heavy metals, whatever it could be. It could even be uranium. So it could catch some pretty vicious things. So when you are attracting these negative particles, you're really reducing a burden of inflammation. So these things could be lead, they could be cadmium, they could be mercury, they could be a whole host of things you really don't want to be getting in your body. You can be acquiring these things by breathing them in, by things maybe in your food, it could be in the water you're drinking. They could really come from just about anything. And a lot of times it's not that obvious where they're coming from. It could be from the dental chair.
Okay, so I've heard of Humifulvate, I think it's called. So what specific product do you take?
I have tried a variety of different humic slash fulvic acid products on the market. So it really gets down to a point of, what is the best price? So I take something called Immune Boost 77, which is from a company known as Morningstar Minerals. Is it the best? I really don't know. There's a point where if you use it long enough, you're going to get a lot of the stuff out of your body. It's not so much how much you're getting out, it's really about how your chemistry changes. The more heavy metals that you're getting out of your body, it literally like your chemistry just changes. And the reason it changes is, think of a mercury. Mercury is something that is so toxic. It's literally the second most toxic substance on the planet, you know, next to radioactive plutonium. So essentially what it does is it breaks down enzymes. Without enzymes, you can't catalyze reactions. Without that, you can't. A lot of things that you normally take for granted that should work in your body just no longer work properly. They can go into your cell and damage the ability of all these different transport systems in your body to go through their normal machinery. If that, it's sort of like you can't have a broken machine work, you know, to do your, expect it to do your job the way efficiently as it did before. So removing these things has a profound impact on the body. And it doesn't happen immediately. It's not like you're going to take some of these things for a few weeks or a few months and expect dramatic changes. But it can happen. And it, sometimes it could cause people to pause a little bit and actually go through a healing crisis. They may actually have a fever, maybe for a few days. They might have headaches. They might have. They might just be hit like they felt like they got hit by a truck. Because some people, when they have toxins being excreted from their system, they literally go through a healing crisis. It's almost as if the body says, wow, I've got less toxins in me. I can now actually do what I want to do. And this could actually be make you feel very ill for a little bit. And so some people get a little scared about this, and they don't really understand what's happening to them. But it could be, you know, the brink of something maybe on a turnaround for them.
Okay, so Brian, a couple questions. So, I mean, I've heard about heavy metals in the past. I understand the negative health impacts. Can you help again with the hair loss connection? So is it just simply that these things just you know, throw a wrench in the machinery, as you kind of said, and just stop the body from working as it should? Or is there any more specific mechanisms that are where, you know, you've really honed in on this as an important area to address if you're trying to address hair loss?
That's a great question. In fact, I should have mentioned that right off the get-go. I'm going to give you a quick story. I used to work at one of the largest integrated medical clinics in the Northern Hemisphere. We would use something called EDTA chelation, which is ethylene diamine tartric acetic acid. It's a synthetic amino acid that goes into your blood, and it's done for about 3.5 hours. And basically what it does is designed to bind to calcium and lead, specifically for those two things. And what I would find is in some people's spontaneously 6 months later, you might have a thickening or increasing density of the vellus hairs into terminal hairs. You know, I thought that was pretty miraculous. So at that time, I started to take a deeper look into, you know, what is this thing called heavy metals, and why is it improving circulation? Why is it that when people were painting World War II warships that were with leaded paint, why was their atherosclerotic plaque being regressed radically? Now, unfortunately, the conventional paradigm of medicine doesn't like to look at these things. Maybe it has something to do with profits, I don't know. However, suffice to say that the heavy metal connection is interesting. So how does this affect hair? If you look at just that one toxic mineral, lead, if you have 1 micron of lead in your bloodstream, it can have a significant impact on the formation of plaque in your artery, for one thing. Another thing is that it can reduce significantly the level of testosterone in your body. Testosterone is not really a bad hormone. In fact, if you look at a balding person versus a non-balding person, the non-balding person is more likely to have higher levels of testosterone. So when you're having something like lead, you're basically breaking down that hormone. And so lead is something that's going to bring you know, a form of pathogens in your body. It's going to bring disease. Any type of foreign element or heavy metal, whatever it might be, it tends to encourage an altered state in your body where it's going to bring maybe a sludging of blood, a reduced oxygen capacity, a higher level of pathogen. So when you're bringing that lead out, you're actually increasing the testosterone. So this is one of the hidden causes of elevated blood pressure. I should just say, make segue real quick and simply say, if you look at people with hypertension or blood higher elevated blood pressure, you're going to see a higher level of hair loss. So interesting, if you bring down the lead, you can also relax the vascular system, bring down the factors that reduce in the testosterone. So basically, you get the lead out, reduce the inflammation, you increase the testosterone, you also start to feel more comfortable. The higher level of testosterone you have, it generally calms a man. So guys who are just really anxious, they're sort of just feel like they can't take on the world, they generally have low testosterone and high cortisol. So they're always on alert. They freak out over everything. They can't relax. Mm-hmm. And their hair falls out. Okay. So that's one example.
Okay. All right. Very good. Interesting. Interesting. It's interesting that you say that because I actually did. So do you recommend that people get their levels tested to see where they're at, to have a baseline? Or do you recommend that irrespective of getting tested, this is something that you should do because of how, you know, the chemical soup that we kind of swim in from day to day in the world we live in?
That's a marvelous question. In fact, I think you pretty much hit it exactly. I pretty much recommend everybody worry about their heavy metals. The thing is if you look at everybody, they don't have necessarily the same heavy metals in their body. They don't have the same combination. They have different heavy metals. The question is not so much, do you have heavy metal toxicity? The question is, which ones are they?
Right.
Everybody has them. It's inescapable. So, you know, some people might have markedly high levels of aluminum. That's not easy to test for, but it is possible. Some people have markedly levels of lead, some mercury, some cadmium, some arsenic. You know, it just goes all over the place. What I would do is I would assume that you have them and take some preparations to avoid them if and only if you're interested in your health.
Okay. So what about getting is humefulvate enough? So my question would be, what if you got tested and you found out your levels were really high? My personality is to throw the kitchen sink at it, right? If I know I have a problem, I want to go after it. And I've also heard that what these things can be really insidious, and that the higher they are, the more difficult they can be to get rid of, because they are interrupting with how your body functions and the detoxification mechanisms, right? So you can I've been told that you can reach a point where you're in a downward spiral, right? The more you accumulate, the harder it is to get rid of. Hence, the more you accumulate, right? So if somebody does get tested and they find really high levels of lead or mercury, whatever the case may be, is humefulvate enough, or is there any additional interventions you would say, or at this point do you say refer to your healthcare practitioner? What's your advice there?
Okay, these are great questions. Yeah, the answer is, unfortunately, for some, humefulvate, you know, simply may not be enough, or the sodium alginate and the thyroid boost may not be enough. Some people would benefit from something like, you know, there's other options. So let me just cover maybe three others. You know, one is called DMSA. Another one is called DMPS. Now, these have been around, you know, for a long, long time. You know, we call them industrial chelators. If they're used properly, you know, under medical supervision, preferably, you should really do a lot of research on the effects of these. And I prefer to use them within their half-life and within their specific type of schedule. And it's something that we don't really have the time to get into depth with. But for some people, it can make a markedly huge difference. One of my favorite types of getting rid of the heavy metals is a form of therapy called infrared sauna. And this is a nice thing because it takes the burden off your kidneys and your liver. Unlike DMPS or DMSA, you know, your kidneys could, you know, really take a hit. And also, there's something I should mention that is, in the realm of heavy metal detoxification, there's also retoxification. And this is something that people really worry about, and it's legitimate worry. Sure, some of these things do work well for some people, and they can make life-changing effects in the brain. On the other hand, some people can be damaged from these things. So you really want to do your due diligence and research these things. Or, you know, as you mentioned, under medical supervision. Some people do benefit from having tested because, you know, there might be some specific areas. It might not even be heavy metals that could be the big deal. It could be another topic we'd have to cover in another podcast, which would be toxic mold. So there's a lot of things that could, you know, be some surprise impostures that they're just making your hair loss fight much harder than it ought to be.
Okay. So if I could summarize, I would say you recommend that everybody use Humifolvate as a preventative maintenance, if you will. And if you do get tested and your levels are higher, you can work with a healthcare practitioner for some of these other more potentially problematic ways of addressing it in terms of the stress that they could put on the liver and kidneys. Or you could go all after the infrared sauna, which I happen to have and I've used as well, as a safer way to remove the heavy metals. So that's good advice. So all right, so we're coming up on the end of the show, so let me just do a quick recap. So we've talked about some additional supplements that you might consider adding to your regimen, tocotrienols and iodine, specifically a product called Thyroid Boost, which contains a concentrated extract of sea kelp. And then we also talked about the importance of heavy metals. Heavy metal toxicity can really have an assault on your hair and on your health. So some preventative maintenance is warranted there. So Brian, thank you again. I really appreciate you sharing your knowledge with us. To the listeners out there, if you like what you're hearing, please subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also follow us on Facebook at Longevity Post. Just do a search for Longevity Post, find us on Facebook. If you have any specific questions that you'd like Brian to answer on the podcast, we encourage you to go to the Longevity Post video channel on YouTube and just write those questions in the comments section, and Brian will be happy to answer them for you. So Brian, thank you again. I think on our next podcast, we'll get into some more lifestyle interventions on what we can do and some other perhaps hidden causes of hair loss that we haven't talked about yet. All right, folks. Thanks, and we'll see you next time.